Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We are here to announce the signing of Pablo Sandoval to a five-year contract. Also includes a club option for a sixth year.
There's a pop-up on the left side. Has Sandoval running into foul ground. The catcher, Leon, didn't see it. And now they're going to collide, and neither's going to catch it.
So Pablo Sandoval has been benched by the Boston Red Sox. Apparently yesterday during the game, he said he had to go use the bathroom. While supposedly in the bathroom, he liked somebody else's photo, some chick, some fairly good-looking woman's photo on Instagram.
They hate him in Boston. He had a perfect place, and he left.
We're not looking for them to do anything abnormal. Just return to the levels of performance before. But if they falter, we feel like we've got guys to step in because our driving force is to win this division.
I don't weigh in at all, so I just do my work.
The main thrust of his off-season program was about agility and conditioning. So the only thing I will say is that he came in with a body fat ratio of 17%, substantially down from last year.
I think they're going to start Shaw. I think Dombrowski wants Shaw. I think that Farrell wants what Dombrowski wants because Farrell's on the hot seat. I think Shaw's going to start on opening day and Sandoval's going to be on the bench.
He's well aware of it. He's got to come in and reclaim it and win it back. But we're talking about a guy who's extremely motivated and has done a good job to date with getting in better shape.
He has a lot that he wants to prove. He's an all-star player, and we've got a lot of confidence that he's going to have a good year.
I think there's been at times better range. There's been times where there's been some plays that, quite frankly, should be made. Tonight was an example of that.
Get the feeling it's kind of make or break, though, for him, this opportunity, and did not swing a good bat with the Paw Sox.
Look at it like this. Pablo is our guy, and it's up to us to get the most out of him, and that's ongoing.
Well, it was ongoing until today, anyway. Red Sox making the decision to designate Pablo Sandoval for assignment, effectively signaling his release from the Red Sox. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. The program is brought to you by Hot Summer Fun at Mohegan Sun, Connecticut, now through September 3rd. So thanks to our friends at Mohegan Sun. Again, to all of you out there, 617-779-0985. Maybe you're headed away for the weekend that time of year. A lot of you go to the Cape. You're going north maybe. Wherever it is you're headed. You know, listen to baseball here for the next hour, at least Red Sox Yankees in particular, and Pablo Sandoval, and we'll take your calls as always. So we'll start with Pablo, although I do have a big picture thought on the Red Sox as well, which concerns the drop in TV ratings, the lack of buzz, if you will, with the Red Sox, the buzz factor. Why doesn't it exist? What is it about this team that is failing to draw in the casual fan, if that's who is missing, or you know, the more maybe somewhere between casual and hardcore? There's another degree there. I think that fan has been reluctant to fully invest in the Red Sox thus far. You know, we gave some numbers to you yesterday that national baseball television ratings are down about 8%. The Red Sox are down 19, and this is supposed to be more of a baseball market than many of the others. So what is it about this Red Sox team? And again, I have a sort of a new developing theory, as we like to say here at the station, that I want to share with you. But we'll start with Pablo Sandoval, and I'll give you the particulars first. Okay? First of all, to me, if you didn't see this coming, you weren't paying attention. John Farrell made a comment last week, to me, that really crystallized the whole thing, talking about Zhu Weilin and the impact he was having on the Red Sox. And for that matter, Devin Marrero gets included in this, too. I keep saying Zhu Weilin because he plays the majority of the time against right-handed pitching. Devin Marrero's out there against lefties. It's effectively a platoon. But what you have now is two functional young players at the bottom of the lineup playing third base. Farrell was asked about Lin last week, and he said, I can tell you, quote, I can tell you, the energy in the dugout and some of the comments, whether it's Linny or Linsanity, whatever it might be, there's a side thing that's going on here that we can't turn away from. We recognize it. And I read that, and I said, Pablo Sandoval's never going to be in that clubhouse again. Pablo Sandoval is not going to be in that dugout again. Pablo Sandoval is a drain. That even if Zhuwei Lin isn't playing all that great, at least he is a positive influence in the dugout. He can control the bat. He can play defense. He can run. He can draw a walk. He can do basic fundamental baseball things that Pablo Sandoval can't do. And more importantly, the energy level is different. The vibe is different. And when Pablo's around, the whole thing's negative. All it is Pablo's weight. Pablo can't hit lefties. Pablo doesn't have range. Pablo's throwing is erratic. Pablo's overweight again. Pablo, he's not living up to the contract. The Red Sox finally decided it was a lost cause. They designated him for assignment. Pablo Sandoval is done. Released. And Dave Dombrowski said today, for those of you who understand the whole DFA or designation for assignment, it gives the Red Sox 10 days to release Sandoval or assign his contract. By assign, that means that they can trade him to another team, or they could, in theory, send him to the minor leagues if he were willing to take that assignment. Dave Dombrowski said today they've already tried to trade him. They could find no takers. He also said that they asked him about the idea of going to the minor leagues, and Sandoval said no. So the process has begun to facilitate Pablo Sandoval's release from the Red Sox. And believe me when I tell you, they are going to be a better team for it. In fact, Dave Dombrowski said as much today. So I'll ask our producer, Jimmy Stewart, to if he could grab that Dombrowski cut. I'm kind of dropping this on Jimmy.
Yeah, he's just on the phone, Maz.
Okay. So, but you will hear from Dombrowski himself here in just a second. And before I give you the particulars on the numbers on Sandoval and ultimately what he cost the Red Sox and how much of a disaster this thing was, and it was a disaster. I would go so far as to call it the worst free agent signing in Red Sox history. Honestly, it blows a lot of the others out of the water, and I'll explain why in a minute. But before we get to the particulars, let me ask Joe Murray back at our studio in Brighton, because we are broadcasting from Ace Ticket Studio here in Kenmore Square. Joe, you tell me. I mean, you can't be surprised by this.
Oh, not at all. I guess the most surprising thing is that ownership gave up on him already. You know, I think that was the battle that Dombrowski's had, is the fact that some of these signings was an ownership move. So the fact that Dombrowski's now in control, you know, he's got the young kids up here playing and playing well. I'm glad that ownership approved the move to move on, because honestly, like you said, Maz, the guy was a drain. He could do nothing of value for the Red Sox anymore.
Okay, so I'll tell you, if you listen to the montage that Jimmy Stewart, our producer, put together at the beginning of the show, you heard a comment in there from Farrell saying, Pablo's our guy. That was only 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was a complete reversal from where the Red Sox were with Sandoval earlier in the year. When Pablo came back on Memorial Day weekend, there was every indication in the broadcast and everywhere else that this was it. This was the last roundup for Pablo. Then he didn't play well, and all of a sudden Farrell said, he's our guy. And in retrospect, I now wonder if ownership intervened at that point and said, we're not cutting him loose yet. Before we do that, try to trade him. See what's out there. Let's see if we can facilitate some other solution that would, A, save us money, and, B, get him out of here. And I wonder if that's when Farrell backed off. The Red Sox tried to do that. They couldn't. Sandoval won't go to the minor leagues. And because he's a veteran player, he has the right to refuse that assignment. He has to be asked. The Red Sox have to get his permission to send him down to AAA on anything other than a rehab. He didn't want to do it. And so here you are. During his time in Boston, Pablo Sandoval earned, based on what I heard and read today, earned over $600,000 per game played with the Red Sox. He played in basically one full season worth of games. I think it was 161 games. In his starts, the Red Sox had a losing record. They went 69-81. And this is no small fact, the Red Sox will eat $48 million of the $95 that they agreed to when they signed Sandoval. They will eat more than half of the contract to release him. That number, that $48 million, is the second highest total ever absorbed by a team in releasing a player. Only Josh Hamilton with the Angels got more money for doing less. Okay, and with regard to the worst free agent signings in Red Sox history, Joe Murray, let me ask you again, back at our studio in Brighton, what would you say is the worst free agent signing in Red Sox history? I'll tell you what, leave Sandoval out of it for now. Other than Pablo, what's the worst?
It's Carl Crawford, by far. I mean, they knew this guy couldn't play in the city. He got all that money. He was even Tampa Bay at the time thought that he wasn't worth that type of money. They thought they already had a guy in place there. That is the worst contract signing, in my opinion.
Okay, so Crawford was more money. Crawford was 7 years, $142 million. It was 20.3 million per year for Carl Crawford. Sandoval's money was less overall and less per year. However, the Red Sox, they were ultimately able to unload Carl Crawford. Now, it took the stupidity of the Dodgers, who also got Adrian Gonzalez in the deal and had to take Josh Beckett's money too. But the Red Sox ultimately got out from under that deal. With Pablo, there was no getting out from under. It's over. $95 million that they effectively lit on fire and flushed down the toilet. Gone. They got nothing out of the money. Nothing. Pablo never gave them anything. He had a bad first year. He was injured for the entirety of the second year. He was injured for chunks of the third one. And when he was on the field, he was a negative. Jim Murray, who was here earlier in the day, read you a story from Alex Speer in the Globe that detailed that Pablo was worse than an average replacement player when he was on the field. He cost the Red Sox about a win for every $30 million they paid him during the life of the contract. He was a negative player based on baseball perspective, or it was actually Fangraphs. He was a negative player. He hurt the cause. They're a better team without him. Independent, as long as Jeremy Lin and Devin Marrero don't make huge mistakes, they're better off. Again, it's not about the Red Sox have subtracted a negative. Marrero and Lynn don't have to help. They just have to avoid hurting the Red Sox.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mazz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
17, I actually felt encouraged in spring training. But then once the season started, didn't see the same performance, particularly from a defensive perspective. And so, and then every time he would get a chance, it really didn't get any better when he was on the rehab assignments. I think it was made easier in the sense that Marrero and Lynn made us, in our opinion, a better ball club. When you look at when we've taken off, it really was with them playing at third base. They contributed a great deal.
So that's Dave Dombrowski today over at Fenway Park explaining the decision to begin the process that will ultimately lead to the release of Pablo Sandoval, designated for assignment today by the Red Sox. The whole Sandoval thing was a disaster. What a mess. Completely from the beginning. Absolute freaking disaster. And so as a side note, quickly, and then I want to get to your phone calls, Lynn has changed his number, which Zhuwei Lin, I found interesting, has changed his number from 73 to 5. So 73 is like a spring training number. I mean, it's what you give a young guy when you don't think he's going to stick very long. They've now given him 5, which tells me that they think he's going to be around for a while, which tells me that I'm not sure they're trading for a third baseman at the deadline. If a deal comes up and it's the right price, meaning a low price, I think the Red Sox would do it. Otherwise, I think they're focused on bullpen help. Just my 2 cents, and I think that that's the right move. We'll now get to your calls, 617-779-0985. James Natick wants to ask a question that I would like everyone to consider. Go ahead, James.
Hey, Maz, earlier on the afternoon show, I remember you guys were talking about who to blame for the Pablo Sandoval signing.
Correct.
And for me, it's easily Tom Warner, but I feel like it's lazy and very surface area to say just because of the marketing stuff and all the stuff you do with Panda and Nesson. For me, right around the time they signed Sandoval, it was right around when they were still kind of pissed at Urquino for forcing Bobby Valentine on him, and they were pushing him out to Pawtucket. Warner's always had kind of this complex of, like, he's just a media guy, and no one gives him any kind of, like, respect when it comes to his baseball knowledge. And so it felt like, to me, that's a very perfect like way for Warner to kind of throw his weight around. Like, hey, he's an MVP of the World Series. He's had a great career, and he's a switch hitter. He can help us out on the field, but we also got this marketing aspect. It seemed like a perfect marriage for the Werner to try and show that he actually knows more about baseball to the rest of the owners than anyone else in that group.
Yes. So, James, I'll tell you what. We had someone earlier in the day single out Lucchino. I sort of put them all in the same group. Ownership, right? And you can include Larry Lucchino in that, even if he was the president of the Red Sox. Do you blame ownership for the signing of Pablo Sandoval? Do you blame Ben Cherington, who oversaw the baseball operation at the time? Do you blame him? How much of it do you put on Pablo for ultimately cashing in on a big contract? And then let's be honest, he shut it down. He did. He got his money, and he quit. Nobody should fall off a cliff the way Pablo did. Not that fast. Not at his age. 36? Maybe. 29, 30? No way. Not in a million years. So you tell me, who do you blame the most? And let me ask you another question. Do you give Dave Dombrowski any blame? And instinctively, you may be saying, why would I give him any blame? He wasn't here when they signed him. And I'll tell you that I do blame Dombrowski partly for them being in the predicament they were in with Pablo. And I will explain why in a minute. Tyler is in Auburn. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. So the first thing is I'm glad that Sandoval's gone. You know, the dead weight's gone. And, you know, whether they have to pay him or not, obviously they do. You know, so that's a good thing. You know, whatever. The second thought is, you know, the Red Sox ratings going down. I don't think it's a Red Sox problem. I think it's a big baseball problem. I just think that the game just doesn't appeal to people, you know, like it once did. You know, I'm 22 and I still watch the game, you know, just like I did when I was 5 or 6 years old. You know, I still do it. But there's not a lot of people like me. You know, people in my age group don't even really watch baseball as much as they once did. I'm not sure. Maybe you can shed some light on that. Thanks.
Okay. So, look, Tyler, again, I would tell you that national TV ratings in baseball are down, depending on the network, from ESPN to the MLB Network to Fox, 6 to 10%. So split the difference. Let's call it 8. Tell you what, call it 10. You want to call it 10? Let's call it 10, 10%. Ratings are down 10% nationally on national broadcasts. The Red Sox are down 19. They are, whether you want to admit it or not, they're a first-place team. So how is that possible, especially when in Cleveland ratings are up? And they haven't had an impressive first half either. Now, I know they haven't won in 70 years. So there's an additional storyline there. People are getting excited about the Indians. But even so, with the Red Sox, how is it 20% instead of 10%? And I think there is a lack of belief in this team. I think that people look at them and say, you know, they're okay, they're pretty good, but they're not great, and they're not good enough to win a championship. I think people do. I think people doubt them. And so the casual fan hasn't bought in. And honestly, I think that there's the hardcore fan and the casual fan. There have to be a lot of people in between. And I'm not sure that person has bought in yet either. Let's go to Mike, who is in Boston. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Tony, how's it going? I mean, I think you have with this team is a team that is caught in between two identities. They were big on sabermetrics, and then they got a guy like Dombrowski, who's more about, like, the eye test. So they go out and they get Pablo because he's good in the postseason, but when they sign David Price, they completely ignore that he's terrible in the postseason. They don't really know where to go, and I just feel like they're lost right now, and they don't know what their identity is.
Okay, so I think they were lost at one time, Mike. I think that they are, you know, somewhere back closer to where they belong now. You know, Dombrowski is certainly more of a, you know, trade prospects kind of guy, and you had a clear change in baseball leadership there too, so you're going to get a different philosophy at that point. But, you know, they did build with Bogarts, Bradley, Betts, to some degree, Benintendi. So there were young guys there. But what did you want to say about Sandoval's contract?
Oh, what I was going to say about Sandoval's contract is, imagine if you said that he cost them $600,000, or he earned $600,000 for every game that he played.
Yeah, imagine over. I think it was about $660,000, actually, but go ahead.
Imagine if you had gone to the Red Sox, if you were a charity, and you said, hey, we'd like that, you know, every game you donate $600,000, they'd say, well, yeah, that's very noble, but we could never afford that. It's almost like they don't realize how much they're spending. They're just so cavalier about wasting money that if they were ever to look at it in a vacuum, they would be disgusted by it. But I feel like I feel like John Henry just gave Dombrowski the checkbook, and he is just tearing through his money. It's just terrible.
Okay, so again, though, Dombrowski didn't sign Sandoval. And, in fact, he didn't sign Alan Craig, and he didn't sign Ruzny Castillo. And those three guys this year are being paid about $40 million. So that part of it, the money part of those guys is not on Dombrowski. Donnie is in Norton and apparently wants to yell at me for something. Go ahead, Donnie. Donnie, you there? Oh, that's unfortunate. I was hoping to get yelled at. What do you know? Might have dodged a bullet there, Joe Murray. How do you like that? My buddy Angelo in Methuen. Get Angelo.
How you doing, Anthony?
Good.
My beef is with nothing. In my opinion, that is not a 24-hour sports station. If you ever watch it, they have too many paid programmings, which I mean is there's companies that are trying to sell their product. I watch the YES Network. They show more Red Sox games than nothing does in the off season and during the summer.
Yeah, listen, Angel, I'm going to let you go, and I'll answer your question here off the air or your comment off the air. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Nesson, it's 24-hour sports network. Nesson's good for one thing and one thing only, games. That's it, games. They could do a hell of a lot more there. They elect not to. But all Nesson is good for, games. You can watch a Red Sox game. You can watch a Bruins game. That's it. The rest of it? I don't think they have a lot to offer. I think they could do a lot more with what they have over there. But that's just my two cents.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It was a major decision because of the remaining terms. But I think it's a pretty loud statement of what John, Tom, and Dave have said, that, hey, for us to put the best team on the field, we need to make this decision. So over the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we've been operating as we are today. And so that doesn't change.
John Farrell, talking about the Sandoval decision. And it isn't a small decision. It's a $50 million decision, effectively. Sandoval had $48 to pay on that contract. Some of that was in a buyout at the end of the deal, an option buyout, which the Red Sox are going to have to pay no matter what, sooner or later. But basically $48 million. Again, the biggest amount ever absorbed by a team to buy out a contract, effectively. Second biggest amount other than Josh Hamilton with the Angels. That's it. A team has never eaten more money than the Red Sox ate today with Pablo Sandoval. So, Yankees are in town, too. I want to get to some of that, which we will do here in just a second. But let's return to your calls. And Lorenzo, who's in Providence.
Tony, thank you for taking my call. Good evening. I want to start off by saying that, Tony, I'm 46 years old. And prior to 2004, I lived and died in every inning from the Sox. And, you know, it was every inning. And I think if you want to look at, and I'm going to call it a plunge, not a dip in the ratings, it's like a piece of pie. You got to cut it up. And a lot has to do with the appetite's been satisfied from the Sox fans. But, you know, I look at the demise of Francona. When Francona was fired, yes, there was the biggest letdown in, as far as, as far as the lead going into the wild card. It was the biggest letdown in MLB history, but letting the Tampa Bay catch up to them. But
yeah, the collapse. Go ahead.
Thank you for that word, the collapse. I couldn't grab it out of my mouth. But what they did afterwards, when they let Francona go, we were fine with that. We were fine with that. But the smear campaign, and it came from Lucchino, the Jeff Howe articles, and put a bad taste in my mouth. There was no reason for that. And then the hiring of Valentine and some of the collective moves that this team's made free agency-wise, since that point, the ratings, they're not going to recover. There's no simple fix, and they get what they deserve.
Okay, so Lorenzo, I just think you're oversimplifying it. So something they did with Bobby Valentine, 5 years ago is still pissing you off? Like, look, if you want to talk about overall decline in the game, fine. Like, that I get. And even if you want to say that the diminishing interest since they won, no question. Although I'll tell you that after they won in 2004, their ratings were higher in 2007. In 2007, when they won, they had an all-time high television ratings. They averaged a 12. Now they're less than half of that. They're down to a 5. So I'm really focused on last year to this year. Okay, in baseball overall, the ratings are down 8%, call it. The Red Sox are 19. Why? And I would tell you that I think the average fan and the casual fan looks at this team now and doesn't know if it can win and knows it won't know until October. And there's no real reason otherwise to invest in the Red Sox until that time. But really, who on this team, other than Dustin Pedroia, who on this team has proven to you that they can win? None of them. None of them have proven to you that they can win or that they know how to win. And until that happens, you're not going to have the same kind of bond for some of these guys that you had for some of the other ones. It's a completely different incarnation of the Red Sox now. You're just not going to have that. Again, I'm acknowledging the overall dip in baseball. Okay? I'm acknowledging that. I'm telling you, I think there's more than that with this team. And who on this team do you feel a connection with having won anything? I'm telling you, there isn't a guy there other than Pedroia, and he now has become, you know, a complimentary player. He was before anyway, but he was a better one. Other than that, they get into the playoffs last year and they get their asses kicked. David Price has never won a postseason start. Neither has Rick Porcello. Neither has Chris Sale because he's never had one. The only guy in their rotation who's ever won a postseason start is Doug Fister. Craig Kimbrough's postseason history, you tell me, isn't any good? I haven't seen him in a situation of consequence yet. Not really. I don't know. Jackie Bradley went 1-for-10 with 7 strikeouts last October. And Xander Bogaerts, before you give me Xander Bogaerts in 2013 was a passenger. He was along for the ride. He did a good job. I love him, but it's different when you're the centerpiece guy, and now you have to produce in the big spot. You can hit ninth and draw a walk, and everybody loves you. Now you got to hit in the middle of the lineup and produce. Totally different thing. Jeremy's in a car.
Hey, Matt, I actually called to talk about Devers and whether they're kind
of... No problem. Go ahead. Yeah.
But, well, I kind of wanted to get back to what you were saying about the ratings down. I think the ratings are down because, you know, you think about when they were really good, they always had Ortiz in the lineup. He was always a must-watch at bat. They're never going to do this, but, for example, if they traded for Giancarlo Stanton, that would bump ratings more than anything. It's not because of anything but the fact that they get shut out once every 4 nights because their offense is just so hit or miss, it's boring to watch.
Go ahead on Devers. Go.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, do you think the trade deadline is predicated at all on Devers? And if so, did they shoot themselves in the foot by only giving them 2 weeks to show them what they can do before it's time to make a move?
No, I don't think Devers has anything to do with the trade deadline at all. I really don't. I think you might see Devers later in the year regardless, and you might see him after September 1st. Maybe you see him as a DH. I have no idea. I think that they are going to go with Lynn Marrero at third base. I think that's what they're going to do, and they're going to make acquisitions in the bullpen at the deadline, unless there's some sort of great third base deal that they can make that costs them nothing. Then they'll do it. Otherwise, again, Lynn changed his number today, or they changed Lynn's number from 73 to 5. So he went from a spring training number, a minor league number, a temporary number, to a permanent full-time big league number. And I know that this is a stupid thing to base it on, but I honestly think they did it because they expect him to be here a while. I do. I think that they look at him and say, no, this kid can play the position in bat ninth. He might not hit 300 like he's hit. Maybe he'll hit 220. But he can run, he can bunt, he can play defense. He's a functional big league player, which is more than what they had at the position before. I think they're probably going to go with Lynn. I do, believe it or not. Lynn and Marrero, I think they're going to platoon. Nick's in a car. Go, Nick.
Hey, Matt, I was just thinking, what about Adrian Beltre at the trade deadline?
Okay, so again, I rule out nothing, but I don't think the Red Sox are going to make a sizable trade. I don't think they're in a spot to give up a big prospect. I don't think they're in a spot to take on a lot of money. We'll see if they go over that luxury tax threshold. Dombrowski says he's not under a mandate, which is probably right, but they've told him they'd prefer to stay under it. So I think that they would prefer to stay under it. So, again, how many moves can you make? I think they are... I want to say limited by their own desire to stay under there. I don't think you're going to get any sort of major move. And look, when I talk about fan interest in the team, too, I want to amplify this point. Okay, because it's a big series this weekend. The Red Sox need this series. The Yankees have kicked their ass this year. They've beaten Boston 4 out of 5 times, and the last two by a combined score of 17-1. The last time they played here, the Red Sox scored 1 run in 2 games, and they lost in both. Okay, so the Red Sox have to show they can beat the Yankees, and the Yankees need the series more than the Red Sox do because they've played like garbage of late. But in terms of the buzz factor surrounding the team, I don't need to tell those of you who are listening. You've seen a lot of winning in 15, 17 years, not just on the baseball field. You know now what a winning team feels like. Frankly, you're spoiled. Not that I can blame you, because I am too. We all are. We've had too many winning teams, okay? Too many to appreciate the grind of a regular season in any sport, except for maybe football. So there's been too much winning. We're all spoiled. But you also know what a winning team feels like. And for whatever reason, this team, with regard to a championship, has not felt like a championship team this year. I'm not saying they stink. I'm not saying that they're not making the playoffs. I'm not even saying that they're going to fail to win the division, because I think they're going to do all of those things. But there's been nothing to really – it's not like they're playing like the Dodgers are or the Astros are, and you sink your teeth in and say, no, this team has a real shot at a championship. I asked Jim Murray this earlier in the day, and I'm not sure he feels they have a chance at a championship. We all know they do. If you get in and you got Chris Sale, and of course you take your chances. But there's something missing. And maybe we're not going to get it till October, because I'm not sure we believe in this team's ability to win yet. Matt's in Hingham.
Hey, Tony. I think people are getting a little too complicated about this team. The biggest thing is they're not very likable. You know, in the past years, you know, you had players like Ortiz. You had the feel-good stories, you know, David Ross. You had Shane Victorino, you know, dancing around the bases. This team, other than Pedroia, there's just not that many players to like. They've been nothing but controversy, whether it's been Price, Sandoval, Hanley.
So, Matt, you don't find Mookie Betts likable?
I do. I'm not saying it's, I'm not.
How about Benintendi? Do you find him likable?
They're likable, but there's nothing, you know, flashy bringing the team back. You know, like the last caller was saying about, you know, you had Ortiz, you know, where his at-bats were, you know, must-see. But the other point I wanted to get to is, given this whole Sandoval thing, do you think baseball ownership and stuff like that is ever going to try and push for, like, football contracts where it's 5 years, $100 million, but $40 million is guaranteed?
No, I think the contracts are always going to be fully guaranteed. So, look, what I would like to see, and I can't believe I'm arguing on behalf of ownership, but to me, there's got to be some sort of buyout provision in baseball. That's a story for another day. I don't want to go too far down that road. It's not a likability factor with this team. That's not the issue. I mean, I would say they lack charisma, if you want to get into, like, some intangibles. They lack some of that, and a guy like Giancarlo Stanton would help. A previous caller said that, no question. But it's not a likability thing. They got plenty of likable guys. But they don't have any that you look at and go, ooh, he can be mean. Like, Ortiz had a magnetism about him. I don't know if they have that guy. Donnie's in Norton. Donnie, go.
Hey, Tony. So earlier in the afternoon show, you were talking about the 0-3 team, which didn't win anything but the vibe they had.
Yeah.
So fast forward to 2013. It took you, I think, until September to get on board with that team and have some confidence. Why can't this team, why can't 2017 be more like 2013?
It could. You might be right. It could. And earlier when I brought up the 2013, Donnie, when I brought up that team, I did say they had an intangible. I didn't buy in, but the fans did. The people did. I didn't, but you did. Are you buying in with this team the same way?
I'm not buying in with them the same way. I'm buying in with them because I think they have the talent that can get them deep.
Okay. And so all I'm telling you is that there's something missing. Okay? And I'm having a hard time identifying it too. I don't know if it's a deep down you look at them and say, well, they sucked last October, now they're going to suck again. Maybe that's what it is. Could be that simple. Or that...
Maz, it's the it factor.
Yeah, Jimmy, maybe that's what it is. It's the it factor. I can't
put it my finger on it, but it's it.
Well, there's something missing. I don't think there's any question. There's something missing with this Red Sox team, and I'm eager to see how this weekend goes. They can do a lot in this second half to really give people the idea that they have gelled and that they're turning a corner and that all of a sudden there is a real championship caliber team here. You can do that in the second half. They did that effectively in the second half last year, and then they fell on their faces in the playoffs. So I'd like to see them get in and at least get to the LCS, and then we can make a better judgment. But right now, I still have a hard time fully. They're going to win the division. I just don't know what they're going to give me come playoff time. I really have no clue, because I question whether they have what it takes to win a championship, because we know what it takes. We've seen it. We've seen enough of it here over 17 years now in a lot of different sports, and I'm not sure this team has it. I'm not.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5.